Sorry. What we're going to look here is a piece from the Tanya, part of Shar HaYichud VeEmunah, and it's referring to the idea of Einod Milvado. Right? And we have an idea that when we say that Hashem is one, it's not the same thing as saying there is one God. Because there is one God is essentially communicating that there, somewhere over there, in the category of gods, there's just one. And you don't get into that category. But there are other categories. There's categories of insects and categories of furniture and categories of transportation. And there's lots of items and entities in those categories. But in the category of God, there's just one that rates and merits to get into that category. But that's not what Jews are saying. We were not saying there is one God. We were saying that Hashem is one. Hashem is one is not the same thing as saying there is one God. Hashem is one means ein od milvado. There is literally nothing but Hashem. And that's what the Baal HaTanya is going to talk about here. There is truly nothing besides Him. An illustration of this is the light of the sun, which illumines the earth and its inhabitants. Okay? So this is his metaphor. This illumination is the radiance and the light which spreads forth from the body of the sun and is visible to all as it gives light to the earth and the expanse of the universe. So where are the rays of light coming from? The sun. Okay? Now it is self-evident that this light radiant is also present in the very body and matter of the sun globe itself in the sky. In other words, where are the rays? Right? The rays that are emanating out of the sun also must be where? In the sun. Okay? For if it can spread forth and shine to such a great distance, then certainly it can shed light in its own place. So within the sun are all those rays. Okay, so when we see a ray of light coming through our window, we have to understand that that ray of light is emanating from and originates from and continues to be connected to the sun. All right? However, there in its own place, this radiance is considered not and complete nothingness, for it is an absolute non-existent. For it is absolutely non-existent in relation to the body of the sun globe, which is the source of this light radiance, inasmuch as this radiance and light is merely the illumination which shines from the body of the sun itself. In other words, what's his point? When the light is in the sun before it emanates from the sun, what is its status in the sun?
Part of the sun.
What?
Part of the sun.
Yeah, but that's not what he said. I'm interested in what he said, not what I said. I mean, I'm interested in what I said, but not right now. Right? I'm interested in what he said. What did the Baal HaTanya say?
It's non-existent.
It's non-existent. The word is bittul. You might have heard this idea in Hasidut, especially in Chabad. They talk about bittul yesh, and that the goal spiritually, the job, is to accomplish bittul yesh. What is bittul yesh? It's a realization and experience of non-existence. Now, why would I want that? We'll get to that in a second. I could understand me wanting that for certain people I know, but not necessarily for myself. Just joking. No, I'm not joking. Yeah, I'm joking. Okay. So, and as much as this radiance of light is merely illumination, which, okay. So, in the sun, it's in a state of bittul. It's there, and yet it's not there. All right? It is only in the space of the universe, under the heavens and on the earth, where the body of the sun is not present, that this light and radiance appears to the eye to have actual existence. Why does the light appear to have actual existence? Why? No, but why does it appear to have actual existence? Because in the sun, it doesn't have existence. It came from the sun. It obviously it emerges out of the sun, and yet when it's in the sun, it really has no status of existence. It's in a state of bittul. Okay? So then why do we now see a ray of light? What enables the possibility of the ray of light to be in the status of yesh?
Separation from the sun.
Well, not separation from the sun, but distance from the sun. That's the word here, right? Look at the last sentence of that paragraph. It is only in the space of the universe under the heavens and the earth where the body of the sun globe is not present. Because the sun's over there, so when the light emanates from the sun, although it continues to be connected to the sun, here the light has presence because the presence of the sun isn't here. Okay? The sun is over there, the light is emanating from it, but because the sun is not present on earth, light on earth has presence. Okay? And here the term yesh, existence, can truly be applied to it. Whereas when it is in the source, in the body of sun, the term yesh, existence, cannot be applied to it at all. And it can only be called not and non-existence. So light within the sun is called bitul yesh. And light, when it emanates from the sun, although it continues to be connected to the sun, at that point it's called yesh. Okay? There is indeed not an absolute non-existence for there. Only its source, the body of the sun, gives light, and there it is. There is nothing beside it. So in the sun, yes, it's true, all these rays are in the sun, but they're in the sun, and yet they have no existence. Okay? They have no existence. All right? When they emanate from the sun, when the sun's not present, they have presence. They have yesh. The exact parallel to this illustration is the relation between all created things and the divine flow. So this is a metaphor, okay? So our relationship to Hashem is like the relationship of rays to a sun, okay? And we are, so to speak, children of God because we are born out of God. We existed within God, and yet in a status of non-existence. And we'll understand that a little better as we go on here. So he says the exact parallel to illustration is the relation between all created things and the divine flow of life force from the breath of his mouth, which flows upon them and brings them into existence. God is their source, and they themselves are merely like a diffusing light and effulgence from the flow and spirit of God, which issues forth and becomes clothed in them and brings them from not into being. So we emerge out of God, we are born out of God, but we remain continually connected and sustained by God. But because the presence of God is not here, we have existence. We are not nullified in our existence. Okay? Hence, their existence is nullified in relation to their source, just as the light of the sun is nullified and is considered not in complete nothingness, and is not even referred to as existing at all when it's in its source. It's in the source, but it doesn't exist. Only beneath the heavens, where its source is not present, can it be called existing. In the same manner, the term yesh, existence, can be applied to all created things only as appear to our corporal eyes, for we do not see nor comprehend all the source, which is the Spirit of God that brings them into existence. Okay, why do we see this? Why do I see you? Why do I feel that I exist? How is it that I am not losing my sense of existence?
Because we're distant from God.
Exactly. Because the presence of God is not visible. If the presence of God were to be visible to us, right, then everything would nullify in existence. Okay? Question is, why don't we see the presence of God? Therefore, it appears to our eyes that the materiality, grossness, and tangibility of the created things actually exist, just as the light of the sun appears to have actual existence when it is not within its source. Okay? So the reason why this is experienced as having an independent existence, and you're experiencing yourself as having an independent existence, that's because the source, God, is not present to you. Yes?
Is independent existence connected to free will? Meaning, if you have a dependent existence, is your free will compromised?
That's the next source sheet. Okay? That's a piece we'll do in Rough Cook next. But now we're setting up premises. Okay? The question is, well, we'll get to the question, okay? Therefore, it appears to our eyes, okay? So this is a perception. That's very important, that this is a perception. We're not saying this is an illusion. This is a partial perception, okay? It's just like in the story of Yosef. When Yaakov is going down to Egypt, so Hashem says to Yaakov, Yaakov, don't worry, Yosef will close your eyes. And the Zohar on that pasuk says, why is Hashem telling Yaakov that Yosef will close his eyes? And the Zohar says, because there's a halacha that when somebody leaves this world, when the person dies, you have to close their eyes. Okay? It's possible, I think it's common, that when a person dies, their eyes open up. You know, the eyelids open up. And that somebody should close the eyes, and they actually bury you with clay shards over your eyes. Right? So the Zohar says, why are the eyes closed or covered? And the Zohar says, because the shapes, the colors, and the textures of this world are in your eyes. Now, what is the Zohar saying? Is the Zohar saying that this is all an illusion? What's it saying? It's saying this is all perception. Right? And what I want you to understand, and we'll go into it deeper later on, that creation is a perception. God created a perception of independent existence. That's really what was created. Right? What God created was yesh me'ayin. There was ayin, right? Just like the light was in the sun, but it had non-existence. Now that yesh, that ayin becomes yesh. And the question is, how does God give existence to that which had the property or that which was non-existent? Okay? And so creation is, the word bara comes means outside. It means to create, but also means outside. There's a saying, toho kibaro. Do you know what toho kibaro means? Toho kibaro means that his inside is like his outside. Baro means outside. Okay? Bri'ah means that Hashem is creating an entity that is experiencing itself as outside of him and having independent existence. Okay? But in the following, the illustration is apparently not completely identical with the object of comparison. What's the problem with the metaphor of the sun and its rays relative to us and God? Yes. The rays are not connected to the sun? A ray of light? Okay.
I thought I had it, but I
didn't. You do have it. You just need to.
The sun will burn out, but God will burn out.
That's true, but that's not the issue here. The difference between, yes, the Baal HaTanya is saying that we are to God like rays are to the sun. And the reason why rays have a status of yesh is because the sun is over there. So the ray that's emanating from the sun is in a world where the presence of the sun is not, which is allowing for the ray to achieve the status of existence, of independent existence, or at least existence, right? Because the presence of the sun is far away. What's the problem with the metaphor relative to God? Yeah, Ben. And again, looking at the metaphor, all metaphors fall short because it's just a metaphor, so it'll never be perfect fit, right? So what's good about the metaphor of we are to God as rays are to the sun is because, yes, rays are emanating from the sun. Yes, rays are continually dependent upon the sun because they're connected to the sun. They're constantly being emanated by the sun, right? But nonetheless, the ray of light does appear to to have existence, which it wouldn't appear when it's in the sun. Okay? And now the Baal HaTanya is saying, now, but that's a great metaphor to compare ourselves to rays of light to the sun, but the difference is what? You want to try again, John?
Yeah, the sun would be like the god in the sky.
Exactly. The sun is far away, but Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere. It was a famous song that the Beatles used to sing. Like, right? So then that's where the metaphor breaks down. That yes, I understand how the rays of sun achieve a status of yesh, because there is a distance between the ray and the sun. Even though the ray is still connected to the sun, it's connected, but it gets some distance from the sun. But you can never get distance from the sun, because the difference between us and rays of light of the sun is we are like rays to the sun, but where are we? We're still in the sun. In the metaphor of the sun, yes, it's true, light is emanating out of the sun. Okay, it still continues to be connected to the sun, but it is emanating out of the sun, and it can get some distance from the sun at some, you know, at some point of its journey. But in our case, we're rays of light that continue to be in the sun. Do you follow that? So then how do we have this experience, and how do these things that we see achieve a status of yesh, a status of existence, when this table and you and I continue to exist within the sun? So we are rays of the sun that have not ever emerged out of the sun, and we never will. So then how is it that we experience ourselves as yesh? And more than that, we experience independent existence, not even dependent existence, right? Yeah?
Then what about Simsum?
Well, what about Simsum? So that's exactly the Baal HaTanya is going to say right now. Pretty good. See, it helps reading before we go into the class? Good. But in the following, the illustration is apparently not completely identical with the object of comparison. Why? For in the illustration, the source, the sun, is not present at all in the space of the universe and upon the earth where its light is seen as actually existing. The sun is over there. Okay, you could trace that light all the way back to the sun, and if you cut its connection, it would disappear. But still, it's journeyed away. There's an umbilical cord, so to speak, but it's still... It gets distance, whereas all created things are always within their source. Do you see this? That's an underline right there. All created things are always within their source, and it is only that source that, I'm sorry, it is only that the source is not visible to our physical eyes. If so, why are they not nullified in their source? To understand this, right? So, what is going on here? What is going on here? So, as I mentioned, we exist within Hashem. We are facets of Hashem. We are like rays of the sun that have not yet emanated from the sun. But if we have not yet emanated from the sun, then how did we ever experience and achieve the status of yesh? And so the answer is, for 10 points, 20 points.
Symptom.
What does that mean? He didn't use the word symptom yet.
We perceive yesh, but really it's because of yesh.
So what creates the experience of yesh? He just said it. Read it.
Whereas all created things are always within their source.
No, so why do we experience yesh? Why does this table seem to have real solid existence, and it seems to be separate from you and
God
me.
God gives us the perception of it.
What?
God gives us the perception of it.
Because of the perception. What basically Hashem did is he put sunglasses on us. So imagine you're a ray of sun in the sun. You have no experience of existence, and suddenly Hashem puts sunglasses on you. And now you experience that you exist. Why? Because of the diminished perception. Do you get what's going on here? Right? It gets what's going on here. So essentially, right now, you and I exist within the ultimate, the perfect. Every word you use for God and endlessly more, right? And yet somehow I feel disconnected. I feel apart from you. I feel apart from the table. I feel apart from any source, any ground, any essence, any soul. And that is because God created a diminished perception. He closed our eyes. The Zohar says that why do you have to close the eyes of the corpse? Because this world is in your eyes. In order to see a new world, you have to close your eyes to this world to see the new world. Well, the way Hashem created the world, so to speak, according to Chassidut and Sod, is that creation is the creation of a diminished perception. Okay. Now, I want you to understand something about psychedelic drugs. Now, I know nobody's here is taking psychedelic drugs, right? But one of the things that they claim in psychedelic drugs is that some of them are not hallucinative. But actually, what claims are is that in the brain, there is a chemical that is being generated that is causing your brain to screen out what's really here. Okay? And that your brain is actually playing a role of not perception, but actually screening out what's actually here. So when people describe, right, this experience of God on drugs, okay, and again, this is definitely not a commercial for drugs. In fact, I'm totally against drugs. I mean, not aspirin, of course, but, well, maybe aspirin too, but how is it working? So some of these drugs, basically they claim that the brain is generating a chemical that is filtering out what's actually here. Because what's actually here is total oneness. What's actually here is you're not seeing. What you're seeing is a diminished perception and somewhat of a distortion. Because you and I are seeing each other separate from each other, right? And somewhat possibly in conflict with each other. And we're experiencing ourselves in a sack of skin. And we believe this is me. I'm in this sack of skin. And I've got to save my skin. And you are a potential conflict, threat, and competitor. Right? But that's the stupidest thinking that my right hand is in competition with my left hand. But it's a perception that we have. Okay? Now what Judaism is claiming is that when you live a Torah life, through learning Torah, through davening and doing mitzvahs, you can alter your mind to begin to see more and more the presence of the One. In other words, imagine two rays of light in the sun. One has very thick, dark sunglasses. And to him, everything is separate and disconnected and in conflict. But another one, he's got sunglasses that aren't so dark. So he actually starts to see that the sharp edges are melting down. Imagine the one that reaches enlightenment and he can take off the sunglasses. It doesn't help because I don't see you. Right? He takes off the sunglasses. Right? And then suddenly, wow, it's all one. It's just one. And what will you experience at that moment? You'll experience the very experience you've been waiting for your entire life and you live your whole life for. Bing! Right? What you hear is a sound from your iPhone. What you experience is pure love. That's what you experience, pure love, because that's the ecstasy of love. That I'm not you, you're not me, and yet we're completely one. And that's just incredible. And so really, what drives human beings is to go back to the original experience or to go back to the original state of being. They want to move from yesh to bittul. They want to move from yesh to ayin. Hashem creates yesh from ayin right? You were, but you didn't exist. I don't know what that means. But yes, that ray of light was in the sun, but not having existence, right? What did that mean? I don't know, right? Then the concealing of the sun, the diminishing of the possibility for the ray to experience the sun is what gives the ray the ability to emerge into a sense of individual existence. But it has some memory. It has a memory of some connection, of something much greater. And therefore, that's what people are yearning for. They want to get back to the one. And as I mentioned to you before, you know, when I was a kid and I went to rock concerts where thousands of people were holding a match, what was that? Why was that so amazing? Why was that so powerful? What was so spiritually uplifting about that? It was just acting out the desire that we're really part of one fire. That's what it is, right? That's what it is. Or when you're at the stadium and everyone's doing the wave. Well, what is that? It's a ritual. But it's actually a ritual that's acting out and trying to access deep in the unconscious the experience that we're just waves in one ocean. That's what we really are. And there is no separation between the waves and the ocean, although the waves are not the ocean, but there's really nothing but the ocean, right? But now I want you to know, and that's the power of Shabbat, you know, Friday night you're sitting and it's low lights and people are singing Nigunim of Dveikut and they're feeling something very powerful, something very genuine and feeling so uplifted. What are they looking for? They're looking for the one. They're looking for that experience where they can move from yesh to ayin, where they can move from that sharp-edged sense of existence that cuts me off from everybody and everything, and suddenly I begin to experience this oneness, this incredible oneness. All right? There's a woman by the name of Jill Taylor. I think her name is Jill Taylor on TED Talks. And this is a woman that had a stroke, and she lost the function of her left brain. And she describes what the universe, what life looks like from the right brain. This is what she's talking about. Jill Taylor. I think it's Jill Taylor. And I suggest you take a look at that. Okay, it's a TED Talk. Maybe we'll look at it together. I don't know if we can set that up. It's a fabulous talk. The only thing is that she's wrong at the end where she says we should all live this way. We're not ready to live this way, right? But she is giving you an understanding that your brain is creating, your perception is creating this, right? This is a perception. Your perception of having independent existence separate from everybody else is a diminished perception, and Hashem created that perception for you. The question is, why did he do that? And we're going to move towards that. So now let's look at a little bit more. You can ask a question in a second. It is written, for a sun and a shield is Havaya Elohim. Okay? The Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei, and Elohim. The explanation of this verse as follows: shield is a covering for the sun to protect the creatures so that they should be able to bear its heat. As our sages of blessed memory have said, in time to come, Olam Haba, the Holy One, blessed be, will take out the sun from its sheath. The wicked will be punished by it. Now, just as the covering shields and conceals the sun, so does the name Elohim shield and conceal the name Havaya, blessed be he. The meaning of the name Havaya is that which brings everything into existence. What did he just say? The name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei correlates to the truth of Ein Od Milvado. But what's so interesting about that name is what? When you see that name, you say something else. Because you don't get that name yet. Okay? And so what does it mean that in the future God will take the covering off of the sun? The sun in this metaphor is the name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, right? But the covering of the sun is the name Elohim. So the secrets of Torah says, Breishis bara Elohim, et the shemayim v'et the aretz. Tell me what that means. What does that literally mean? Exactly. In the beginning, he created Elohim. Who's he? Right? Now, I know we read it in the beginning, Elohim created. But it doesn't say, Breishis Elohim bara. It says, Breishis bara Elohim. So the mystic masters tell us that there's a secret here, that in the beginning, he, who's the he? Yudke Vavke, the Ein Old Mevado, created Elohim, which is the perception or the diminished perception of Yudke Vavke. He covered up, he concealed his nothing but himness, nothing but oneness, to allow for you to emerge and experience existence to the point that you even experience yourself separate from him.
Why can't we?
Because you're not there yet. I mean, maybe you are, Josh, but I'm not sure about that. Why can we connect to Elohim? Because Elohim is a diminished manifestation of God's truth, which allows you to experience independent existence. God is covering up. He is hiding his total truth, and that's how you emerge as an independent existence, right? In other words, it's the sun, right? How does the sun give his rays within him, the emergence of independent existence? He hides himself, or he puts sunglasses on the rays, and suddenly they experience themselves as having independent existence, and everybody looks to be independent, separate from the sun, and maybe even don't even see any sun. It's so thick, the glasses, the shades are so diminished that I don't even see a sun anymore. What, I'm in a sun? Imagine these rays of light saying, who's the sun? And he says, well, the sun is here, the sun is there, seven through and everywhere. I don't know what you're talking about. All I see is me and you actually kind of annoy me. I'd prefer you not to be here, right? But that's how thick the sunglasses are. Not yet. No. Don't. That's not your conclusion yet. But again, you got to stick with me, right? You don't stick with me, you'll end up being a heretic. So you got to stick with this, okay? All right?
Can anyone connect to you with K-Bob?
I do all the time. You think I'm joking?
I don't know.
I am. I am. I am joking. Okay? All right. So this is what I want you to understand over here. The creation is a perception, and we're going to take a look at some quantum physicists who actually do talk about these ideas of consciousness. But essentially, we exist because we have been given a diminished consciousness of ourselves and the truth, which allows us to experience ourselves as independent and separate from the One. The One. And so the name Elohim is a covering that's screening out. It's sunscreen. It's screening out the sun, which allows for the emergence of Yesh, of the experience of existence, to the point of independent existence, right? To the point of chaotic existence where everyone is disconnected and there doesn't seem to be any connection whatsoever. That's how much the truth of Hashem has been hidden from us. But the way God creates us is by hiding himself from us. But he's not hiding himself, it's by putting sunglasses, so to speak, on us, so to speak. So that is, I believe, the drive for these hallucinative drugs, because some of them are not hallucinative. And again, don't take it, because essentially you're trying to experience something that you are not ready for and you are not worthy of, so it will just burn your brain, right? It will just burn your brain. It will damage you, okay? So a person can say, well, wow, if on drugs I'm actually getting a glimpse of the way things really are, why shouldn't I do that? Because that's not the way you really are. You're not there yet. You haven't done the work yet. You're trying to get the view from the top of the Empire State Building, but you're not willing to go up the stairs or even take the elevator. You want to fly up to the top like Superman, and you're not going to succeed, right? It will leave you devastated. And what happens on these trips is that people don't know how to come back and deal with the world anymore, right? Because they've got a taste of a perception that they haven't really accomplished yet and aren't ready to actually live in a consistent way with, And therefore, definitely don't even think about that. But I wanted you to understand that essentially what's going on is Einod Milvado, there's nothing but him, right? We exist within him, but why do we experience ourselves as having independent, separate existence of him? And why don't we even see him? And the answer is, it's something in your brain, right? You've been created with a sunscreen, right? Now, it says in the future that God will take the sun out of its covering. The righteous will be burnt, the evil will be burnt by it. The righteous will be healed by it. Why will the righteous be burnt by it?
They're not ready for it.
Why are they not ready for it?
They haven't trained.
Why didn't they train?
Because they didn't realize that they were connected to them.
Exactly. They lived a life based on the illusion or the perception that I'm existing independent. I don't have to align myself with God. I don't have to do what he wants. There's his will and my will, and they're separate. I don't even know if there's his will. I don't even know if he exists at all. So they lived a life that betrayed and contradicted the truth. When the truth will finally be realized, it will just be overwhelmingly painful, right? And that's really what Gehenna is. Gehenna is just the realization of truth. Gehenna and Gan Eden are the same thing, right? Two people will be revealed. It will be revealed to two different people, Einod Milvado. One will feel he's in Gehenna, and the other one will feel he's in Gan Eden, right? They're really states of mind. They'll be experienced as places, but they're states of mind. Because the evil person, right, he thought Einod Milvadi. There's nothing but me. And he's lived his life on this ego trip, selfishly thinking that all that matters is me. Well, when he finds out that the me doesn't exist independent, right, that'll be a shock. That'll be future shock. And that will be his Gehenna. The righteous person says, look, I know I experience Einod Milvadi, but I know it's not true. And I live my life based on believing Einod Milvado. There's nothing but him. And I realize that you and I are both rays of the same sun, existing within him, aspects of him, really nothing but him. Right. So the righteous, but it says they'll be healed, because we do take a cut by being here. Even the righteous are suffering from the experience of this sense of self that's set off and cut off from God. So they are hurting. So they will be healed by this revelation, right? But the evil people will be burnt by this revelation. But it's the same revelation, and that is one revelation, and it's coming. Einod Milvado. There is only oneness. There is only what I call one-ity. Not unity, because unity implies there's two that's put together. There was never two ever. It was just one-ity, right? But the perception allowed us to perceive that there's two. There's two. So let's hear some questions on this. You can read the rest of this on your own. But the point being is the Baal HaTanya doesn't use the word Tzimtzum right here, right now. But really the name Elohim correlates to the idea of Tzimtzum. The idea of Tzimtzum is that God has diminished our perception of his truth, which allowed us to experience ourselves as existent, independent of him, to the point that we don't even perceive perhaps that he exists at all, that there's any one continuum reality that embraces and fills and connects us all. Yeah, Josh.
So can only prophets connect to Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei?
Even prophets didn't. They got closer to it, right? They got closer to it. But to be in this world and absolutely know Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, no, you wouldn't be perceiving this world anymore. Not the world as it is, which is all separate and disconnected, no. Right. So I can give a whole shiur on that based on the Arizal talks about where they were going and why they went crazy. We can talk about that, but not yet. But yes, this is a journey of expanded consciousness whereby there are certain people that are much more aware that we're all really facets of each other and that we're really one. Right? We're really one. And there's just one. Right? And yet somehow I don't lose my sense of self. Right? The goal isn't to move from yesh to ayin and then suddenly you disappear. The goal is to experience this mystery, which is love, whereby I'm not her, she's not me, and yet we share a single identity. And that's the ecstasy of love, because it basically mirrors the truth that always was, and you're seeking that truth, right? Right. The search for love is really synonymous with the search for God, although God, you know, love isn't God. God is more than love, but love is the closest experience that delivers the emotional knowing of God's oneness, right? That there is a oneness. Yeah, Yoni. Ah, so you can see it, but you can't say it. You say Adonai. You don't say Yud Kei Vav Kei. There's one person that did say Yud Kei Vav Kei once a year. The Kohen Gadol, right? And then something mysterious happened when they heard the name emerging from the Kodesh Kodeshim. Is suddenly the place was crowded like sardines, and suddenly everybody was able to bow down. They had space around them, right? They went into a whole new state of consciousness where they experience a oneness that includes all of us, right? And we all have space and we're all connected and there isn't, you know, there isn't any conflict or discomfort, right? But then the Kohen Gadol would forget how to pronounce that name when he left. And essentially Yom Kippur is the day that comes the closest to experiencing the Yud Kei Vav Kei truth, okay? So we have more work to do to talk about the different implications experientially of the different names of Hashem. But right now what we've understood here is Ein Od Mavado, you exist within him. Why do you experience yourself as existing separate and outside of him? Because God created that perception, right? That truth is being filtered out by your perceptive faculties. And it's because you don't know that God is one and you don't experience that God is one, that's how you actually were born into experiencing independent existence. But now the question is, so how do mitzvot help us get back to that experience, which is Olam Haba? When we say Olam Haba, it means you will know and viscerally experience Ein Od Mavado, right? And that will be a world of pure love, pure peace, pure connection. Right. That's what Olam Haba is. And there are people that have tastes of Olam Haba in this world. There are people that are living with Olam Haba. They don't have it completely yet. But you can have glimpses of Olam Haba, like Shabbat is a glimpse of Ein Od Mavado. It's a glimpse of that oneness, of that connectivity, whereby I no longer feel a separate, independent, cut-off sense of self that's self-contained and alone and alienated. But I'm just one of the colors in the spectrum of one light. Yeah?
So before I was under the impression that, Elohim and Yud-Kei Vav-Kei were different aspects, different aspects right now. But one's actually a higher level than the other?
Yes, it says Hashem hu Elohim. It never says Elohim hu Hashem. Right? That's like, I am Rabbi Aaron, but Rabbi Aaron is not who I am because I'm more than Rabbi Aaron, okay? So it says Hashem hu Elohim. We say that at the end of Yom Kippur, Hashem hu Elohim, Hashem hu Elohim. What are we saying, right? Right, so well, we're going to develop that more. But right now, Elohim is the diminished experience of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. Right, Yud-Kei, the truth of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei is being screened out by understanding Hashem as Elohim. And there's a reason why we need to, and it's Elohim that creates the world. When God, so to speak, diminishes his total truth as Yud-Kei Vav-Kei and operates through the diminished manifestation called Elohim, then we start seeing creation of all these separate things, right? But the truth is behind it all is total oneness, right? And it's all one. And it's just one. And yet somehow we don't lose our distinctions. Right? We are one, but we're not one the same. Okay? So if you have more questions, you can ask me privately. We're over time. And thank you so much. And you can hold on to these if you want to or give them back to me. But don't leave them on the table. Send them back up here.